celebrate the 88th year of the founding of AA in Akron, Ohio, with this 1988 version of Joe and Charlie, brought to you by the big book livingalive.com.
And it's a little more difficult for me to argue with 100 than it would be with one. And especially if that 100 has recovered from the same thing that's killing me as a practicing alcoholic. I think the other important point here in this foreword to the first edition is to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. Now, Joe and I have been around AA long enough to know that the only requirement for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous is a desire to stop drinking. Nobody can make anybody in AA do anything that they don't want to do. You know, you can go to an AA meeting and you can stand up in the meeting and you can say, I don't like you people at all. Sure as hell don't like your 12 steps. And can just barely drink your lousy old coffee. But I'm going to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous because I've got a desire to stop drinking. And nobody can say a word about that. In fact, you don't even have to be sober to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And now it helps if you are, you know. But you really don't have to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But our book does not deal with membership in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our book deals with one thing and one thing only. Recovery from the disease of alcoholism. And there's probably a few things that we may have to do if we want to recover from the disease. And the first 100 have laid out for us in a very precise manner exactly how they recovered. I would assume today that if I followed the same instructions that they used in the beginning, that I could expect the same thing they got, recovery from the disease of alcoholism. You know, kind of like making a cake. We go to a potluck meeting, and you've made one of those beautiful strawberry cakes, which is my favorite. And I taste that cake, and oh boy, it's just perfect. The icing is right, the moisture content's right, the texture's right, and it just melts in my mouth. And I say, who made this cake? And you say, I made it. And I say, would you tell me how you did it? And being a good cook, you'd say, sure, I will. And you'll sit down, and you'll write on a piece of paper for me a set of instructions. You'll tell me the ingredients to put in the cake. You'll tell me the quantity of the ingredients. You'll tell me the sequence in which to mix them together, the temperature at which to bake it, and how long to bake it. Now, if I take your instructions home in my kitchen, and I begin to make this cake, and I look at your instructions, but with my keen intellectual alcoholic mind, I decide, now, really, it oughtn't to have 2 eggs, it ought to have 4. Instead of 1½ cups of sugar, it ought to have 3. And instead of baking it for 375, I'm going to bake it at 450. Instead of baking it for 18 minutes, I'm going to bake it for 45. Now, when I get through with that thing and take it out of the oven and set it over on the cabinet and let it cool off, and I take a bite of it, well, sure, I'm going to be biting a piece of cake. But I wonder how closely it would resemble your cake, which was my reason for making it in the first place. I believe if I followed your instructions exactly, then when I tasted my cake, I could expect it to taste like yours did. And if I would like to recover as the first 100 did, then they have given me a precise recipe for the recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Joe?
Okay, this brings us to the doctor's opinion. And as we begin to say, the first thing is, what is the problem? And this was all began in 1930 when Dr. Silkworth went to work at the Towns Hospital in New York. As Charlie said, as we said earlier, putting things in perspective, since the beginning of time, alcoholism has been a problem with man. Today, men and women. It's like today we have another great health problem called cancer. And very hastily, I think we would say researchers are looking for a cure or a solution for this illness. But if we got more precise, we might say that they are trying to find out what is cancer. If they knew what it was, then they could develop a solution. And since the beginning of time, no one really understood alcoholism. And as we look back on it, it's very ironic what happened. Now, as people begin to have problems with alcohol, and that was from the very start, what happened, it was the non-alcoholic people, or the people who, see, as people begin to drink, they say 1 out of 10, and now they're talking about 2 out of 7, but let's say 1 out of 10 people that drink, one of them has a problem, 9 of them don't have a problem. Now, it was the non-alcoholic people, the people who didn't have a problem, who tried to find out what was wrong with the person with the problem. The attitudes and images of the alcoholic were developed by the non-alcoholic. It was a non-alcoholic who say, he must be weak. He must be sinful. They were trying to find out what was the problem. The alcoholic probably kept on drinking. It didn't make him no difference, you know. But all the misinformation was generated by the non-alcoholics. And we go back in the beginning of time, and this has been a problem with man. All the way up to 1930, we never understood the problem. What is the problem? So we tried a lot of solutions. I love to talk about Solomon in the big, big, big book. He was the social worker of his day. Everybody came to Solomon with problems, and he had great insight into human problems. And surely, you know, it was a discussion about an alcoholic. I don't know what they called him in those days. But in Proverbs 23:29 to the end, he says, "Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has wounds without cause? They that tarry long at the wine." I mean, they had them in those days, you know. They didn't. They was all winos. They hadn't had this other stuff yet, you know. And he went on to the. He had a great insight to it, and he talks about it. He said, "You know, and you know, beware of the wine. The smoothness right in his cup is pretty as red, but at last his bite is like a serpent, and his sting is like an adder." He said, "You will be as one who lies down in the midst of a sea. You know, you sway around a lot." Or sleeping at the top of a mast, how the mast of the ship tosses. And he said, "You will say they have beaten me, and I felt it not." You know, the next morning you feel like somebody was beating on you. You don't know what happened to you. And he sure knew some of us fellas, because he said, "Thine eyes shall behold strange women." They was doing that then. "And thy heart shall utter perverse things." You'll say a lot of things you don't want to say. But then his final statement, it shows the wisdom of Solomon, because he had a great insight into human problems. But he did not understand alcoholism. Because his final statement was, "But still yet, they will rise in the morning and they will seek it yet again." So they get up and drink the same thing. None of the great minds down through history understood the problem, but many solutions were tried. Finally, I think it was 1784, the first recorded American physician, Dr. Benjamin Rush, who was one of the earliest signers of the Declaration of Independence, said he thought this was a disease process. This was the first time this idea was conveyed. And he said he also thought that the solution was total abstinence. But this that I didn't take, didn't go over. Most people assumed it was a weakness or a sin, basically, and we treated it and people continued to die. Dr. Silkworth went to towns in 1930, and he didn't go there to do this, by the way. Dr. Silkworth couldn't find a job. It was during depression. And Dr. Silkworth took a job at the town's hospital for $40 a week, working with drunks. Doctors just don't go. No, you know, doctors don't go to medical school and say, "I want to work with alcoholics." That ain't too good. I mean, here this guy was stuck with these people. And he became very interested. He was a kind of person. He was a good doctor and had a great desire to help people, even though this was not his field. Or did he have an interest in that? But he became immediately interested in these alcoholics. You know how we alcoholics are. And again, his own daily observation. He did it on the fire line every day. And he said, "You know, I know that people say these people are weak and sinful," but he said he began to discern some force within these people that was causing this destruction. Now, he saw no one recover. Everyone came to the towns and went back and come back and finally died. He saw no recovery day in and day out. But he come up with the idea that this force was made up into, he was able to divide this force into two things. He says, "I believe part of it is in the body and part of it is in their mind." And he developed this concept over a period of time, and he finally was able to share it with Bill. And I really, you know, it's ironic. Bill was probably the first alcoholic in the history of the world that really knew what was wrong with him, the exact nature of his problem, as Dr. Silkworth came up with this concept. And he put it in front of the Big Book. It wasn't published in front of a medical journal. It was published in front of the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. And he didn't say, "I have found the answer to alcoholism." He said, "This is just my opinion." And it's still entitled a doctor's opinion. As Charlie and I were, if you care to look, and those of you would like, in the Big Red Book, when the doctor wrote this and put it in front of the Big Book, he did not sign his name to it. It was many years, I think, in the second edition, because it was too far before its time. And he wouldn't have been able to work in his profession. if he had put his name on the doctor's opinion at that time. Today, the whole world accepts alcoholism as a disease, and it began in the front of the big book with Dr. Silkworth.
After some 100,000 people had recovered from their disease based on the doctor's opinion, finally the American Medical Association recognized it as a disease in 1956. But the doctor was the first guy to really bring this thing out. Now let's go to Roman numeral 24, and we'll begin to look at a few things the doctor had to say. Well, in Roman numeral 24, it says, the physician who at our request gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms that we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. Now, this is the first time we can find anywhere a statement to the fact that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. Everything prior to this referred to the mind only. Weak willpower, moral character, sin, and etc. Nobody had ever come up with the idea that the body was quite as abnormal as the mind. And I think for we alcoholics, as we read this statement, we must also realize not only is the body abnormal, but he's saying that the mind is too. So because of the abnormal body and the abnormal mind, we have developed this disease of alcoholism. It said it did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectees. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense and explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. Now, if a textbook is to be used to transfer information from the mind of one human being through the written word to the mind of another human being, thereby increasing the knowledge of the other human being, then that transfer will be made based upon the understanding of words. If the writer of the book uses a word and he understands it one way, and the reader of the book reads that word but understands it's a different way, then the information that comes through is going to be garbled information, and the knowledge is going to be incomplete. And we believe there's a few key words in the big book that without understanding them the way the writer meant it to be understood, we simply are not going to get the idea. For instance, this word allergy. Whenever we come to AA, most of us already have some preconceived ideas about what an allergy is. I know that I did. I knew that an allergy was a thing that if you got around something that you were allergic to, it would always show up with some physical manifestation, some physical indicator that would show us that we're allergic to it. For instance, if you're allergic to strawberries and you eat strawberries, you break out in a rash, the rash being the manifestation of the allergy to strawberries. If you're allergic to milk and you drink milk, normally you end up with a bad case of dysentery. If you're allergic to ragweeds and you get around them, your eyes will itch, your nose will itch, they'll begin to water, and you'll start to sneeze. All three of those allergies having a visible physical manifestation. Now, I came to AA and they said, Charlie, you're allergic to alcohol and you'll never be able to safely drink it again. And I said, how in the hell can I be allergic to alcohol? I'm drinking a quart a day. Now, how in the world can you drink a quart a day of something you're allergic to? That's impossible. And I said, besides, when I drink it, it doesn't make me break out in a rash. Doesn't necessarily make me have a bad case of dysentery. Once in a while it would, depending on what I've been drinking, but usually it didn't. Nor did it necessarily make my eyes and nose itch and make them water and make me sneeze. And I said, I don't understand what you're talking about when you tell me I'm allergic to alcohol. And they said, well, you don't need to understand. They said, all you got to know is just you're allergic to it and you can't drink it and that's enough. Well, today I know why they told me that. Because they didn't understand it any better than I did. But I'm the type of alcoholic that something like that just bugs the hell out of me. And after a while, with my keen intellectual alcoholic mind, I had to find out what this thing allergy really means.
If you enjoyed this episode of Joe and Charlie from Akron in 1988 and would like to hear other versions, different seminars from different years, please visit our website, BigBookLivingLive.com.